Game On on 2FM. With Green Firm, healthy snacking made easy with Green Firm's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
It's Friday the 20th of November and you're very welcome to Game On.
Coming up tonight, Lisa Fallon and Alan Cawley discuss the FAI's latest so-called drama.
Sheridan. It's not easy. Onto it comes Houghton. And Houghton with the shot. And it's there! Bring me back and I'll do the job for you, Jack. And he's done just that after only 11 minutes. What splendid, sparkling opportunism.
With three provincial titles up for decision, we get the verdicts of Declan Brown and Brian Farrell.
Parker coming back out to Luke Conley out the wing. Can he go for the spectacular? Oh, he's not. It's going to land in on the edge of the square. Who'll get up and win that ball? Chance for Cork. A spectacular goal for Cork. Right at the end of this match has been sent in by Mark Keane, the man home from Australia. And is that the goal that sensationally knocks Kerry out of the championship?
Mark Keane, you beauty. Two more big names will exit the hurling championship this weekend. Niall Moran gives us his view.
Thorig Walsh now getting that ball forward. Touched there by the fullback under pressure. And it's in the back of the net. And it's that man, Richie Hogan, who's got it.
Game on 2FM.
Now you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Now, Donica, you mentioned that so-called drama with the FAI in the intro there, and there has been a little bit of development. It's been reported that Stephen Kenny did meet with Gary Owens today, and it's been described as a very positive meeting, and this comes after the criticism that he faced for using a video in a dressing room ahead of the recent England-Ireland international. Now, it's also been reported that a further meeting with CEO Jonathan Hill and the board members of the FAI is expected to take place later this evening. So it is developing a little bit. It's actually strange to think that we are having such a detailed conversation, and there has been so many detailed conversations about this because I don't know, Donica, you've been in dressing rooms. Did you play? What kind of motivational videos did you play?
For me, Marie, I'll be honest with you, motivational videos were done in 2007. I'm talking about my own personal view. I'd enough of them. I remember we won in 2006 with Munster, and even in 07 they were using clips of us coming home, and I just didn't get a buzz off it. And then when you'd win in with the Grand Slam with Ireland in 2009, I know they were around it, but I just thought it was outdated. For me, it always was something special if someone gave me my jersey. If there was someone that came in, like I'm just thinking of Stephen Kenny there. Imagine if Kevin Sheedy or Ray Houghton had came into that squad and gave him their shirt and spoke about how playing against England was such a big moment for them. So, I know there's an awful lot of talk about the video that was played. I haven't seen it myself personally, but I question those type of motivational videos. But then people are different. I could be sitting in the dressing room with someone else and they might be buzzing after seeing it. And look, I think from my own viewpoint, politics has absolutely no place in sport. It just does not fit. But history does, and history matters, and that's what you represent. When you go out and you put on your national shirt, you're representing your country and you're representing your family, where you're from, and you have a responsibility. Like the greatest one that I remember, and you had a brilliant chat with John Hayes last night, but was playing in Croke Park, and I shook President Mary McAleese's hand and I went to war. You know, that was the way I thought in my head. And, you know, I know there's an awful lot of opinions about what Stephen Kenny did and the video, but I question his squad as well, that someone, if they weren't happy with this, go up and say it to Stephen Kenny's face. Don't be going around anywhere else or looking to anyone else. I just think if, you know, in big squads like that, you should be able to, you know, say that I didn't appreciate that or I got nothing from it and that was a waste of time. But it obviously didn't work. We lost 3-0.
That's true as well. Well, John Hayes did mention last night the emotions that the memories and the stories about Bloody Sunday that stirred in him. And I think we all saw him that day when the national anthem was played, and those emotions. I agree with you, Donica. I think it's very unfortunate to be in the situation for Stephen Kenny. It must be extremely disappointing for him and his coaching staff and the backroom team and everyone that has worked so hard to try and make change in that squad to have to deal with all all of this. But tell me about dressing rooms, right? When you look at the makeup of Ireland and the international teams, they're obviously quite diverse and people coming from different backgrounds and have different beliefs. Is it hard to gel all of that when you are trying to go to war, as you described it?
Yeah, look, it's very different in rugby because we're 32 counties represented. You know, it is a national team when we come to rugby. And maybe you do find that really a little bit difficult when you're Irish schools or Irish 19s, because you just don't know how the dynamic, and you don't know guys all that well and what can be said or what's acceptable. But I'll be honest, an amazing thing kind of happens within it, that you see how much it means to everybody, be it Rory Best or Marcus Horn, you know, wherever they're from, they want to represent and go out and play the best they can anytime they put on a green shirt. And I know everyone will probably question, you know, like you've Ulsterman in the dressing room, but they were always the drivers when we played England. Stephen Ferris, Rory Best, even Andrew Trimble. I remember him speaking up. And I know there's been an awful lot of chat by Eddie Jones chatting about, you know, Ireland being like the United Nations. But I'll never forget when we scored in Croke Park, Isaac Boss got a brilliant try and we all ran in to celebrate with him. And Isaac Boss nearly met us 10 metres out going, "We haven't got time, lads. We haven't got time." And all he wanted to do was rack up a score. He wanted it like to be our best score ever against England. And I'm there, you know what I mean? People can view him in different ways. Oh, he was originally born in New Zealand. In that moment, he couldn't have been more Irish. You know what I mean? That he wanted us to do well. And look, I understand, like, I've been over in England. Some of my best friends in rugby are now English. But it's okay to hop off each other. That's, you know what I mean? That is all right. We'd go to battle. I remember I'd go on a Lions tour, and I must say I nearly felt bad about it. I got on with the English lads probably better than the Scottish and the Welsh.
Did they think you were really funny?
No, it was the Scottish fellas were too tight and the Welsh lads were just daft. So, yeah, but I must say a lot of my English, I get on really well with my English friends, but there is history there, so we shouldn't go away from it.
It's actually interesting that it is the centenary of Bloody Sunday and Ireland are playing England in a rugby match again, and it is the comments of Eddie Jones talking about the United Nations that has been the focus of the build-up to this, and the fact that so many players are going to be from other countries representing Ireland. I think it'll probably be 5 starters, if I'm right, and then maybe 8 will play a role when you take into account the replacements as well, which is quite interesting. And I think it also shows the evolution of the sport as well.
Yeah, and I think that's important. Look, Stephen Ferris made the point when he was chatting to us, you do want Irish players going out, but we haven't got the artillery England have in terms of, they've 12 English teams in their Premier League, so they can feed off that. We've 4, and you know, there's sometimes we need to support it to make sure that we're competitive, and we've been brilliantly competitive. What I love is what we get is buy-in from players that come in that, you know, really care. I'm just picking because I know him a little bit better, but I used to always slag the Limerick lads anytime we'd have training in Limerick, that no, not Limerick again, it's like Angela's ashes, it's always raining up here, just anything, big up Cork every chance you got. But I remember fellas like Keith Earls, Paul O'Connell would just not even acknowledge you, but CJ every time would take you on and he'd say, "What do you mean, why are you having a dig off Limerick?" So I just when they play, they put in massive performances. I'll be honest, I think that is all smoke, and I actually thought it was wrong by Eddie Jones to make a big thing about that. The one I do find interesting, though, is him having a dig off Andrew Porter. He said that the referee is going to have to, you know, keep a close eye on him scrummaging-wise this weekend. I think that's why Quinn Rue as well is in the team. I think you chatted to John Hayes last night. He gave great insight into the importance of speed of engagement and what we need to do. But that's going to be a brilliant, brilliant battle.
And just in terms of Eddie, when he does say things like, is that going to motivate those players, those 5 or 8 players, when they are going out?
Do you know what? I actually think maybe you have a bit more example, but Mourinho, how much does it carry anymore because you've heard it all before, if you know what I mean? Maybe 2 years.
You're expecting it.
Yeah, it's like panto, you know what I mean? And this is exactly what happens when he goes in. It's a smokescreen for what's really going on. Like, he's put something out there. I did think he was wrong to say that, though. Mm-hmm. I can understand, having goals. And he's right. If he believes Andrew Porter's profile at scrummaging and he wants to take an advantage by highlighting that. But I think the dig at, calling our team like the United Nations is wrong and unfair. And look, I hope, like everyone, those players go and put in a massive performance, but it's going to be difficult. But aren't we up for it already? Like, isn't it?
You actually are.
I can't wait to watch the match.
Well, Richie Murphy was out talking to the media today. Let's hear what he had to say.
Yeah, no, everyone came through fine. Captain's run in a wet Twickenham, so we're hoping that'll dry up by tomorrow. But everyone came through fine. Light run this morning, and all the boys are in good spirits and looking forward to tomorrow. Really, everyone's fit and healthy.
In terms of the game, up against a vastly experienced England team, so therefore, how important are the opening 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes?
Yeah, they tend to be very important, and I suppose the last couple of times we've come to Twickenham, it's been tough in those early stages. We haven't got our foothold into the game quick enough, so that is something that we need to focus on. It's one of those things, though. If those first few minutes don't go right, you still have to move on to the next thing, so we just got to take it play by play and be ready for whatever they throw at us, but also go with the intention of attacking them from early on.
A final question for me: how important is it that you're mentally strong? If you suffer a setback early on, you concede a try, that you don't drop your head, that you just draw a line in the sand and move on.
Well, that's one thing that we've been working on for a long time now. Is how we move on to the next thing and as a group. And I think where we're getting to is, obviously, this team. There's quite a few new faces in it, and those guys have really come in and brought the rest of the guys forward in many ways. But dealing with those little setbacks and getting on to the next moment is massively important, a little bit like what I was saying there early on. So if those first couple of minutes don't go that well, our focus needs to be on the next ball.
Now, let's move on to soccer, because Alan Cawley joins us now on the line. Alan, we've been having a little bit of a chat about what's going on with Stephen Kenny and the Ireland team. Just give us your take on it.
Yeah, I was listening to the chat with Dunica and all that, Marie, and to be honest, which I think it's a bit of a storm in a teacup, and I actually can't believe the traction that it's garnered and that it's turned into a bit of a bigger story than what it needs to be, really, because you go through every team at every level of sport, Marie, and you're always looking for added little 1% or 2% in terms of motivating teams or going back through old games or old things that may have happened between two rivals or whatever the case may be. And I think, to be fair to Stephen, you're looking at that game the other night, obviously, against England. And if you were to put the England players down on paper and then you put the Ireland players in the current kind of state that we're in or the current group of players that we have, there's absolutely no comparison. And that was obviously borne out in the game. We were well beaten by much better players. So I think, to be fair to Stephen, he's probably looking for some sort of motivation. If he can get an extra little bit of 5 or 10% out of them for that game to try and level things up in some way whatsoever. And I have no issue with that whatsoever. And from what I've heard of the video, it's very, very tame. And I think it's just a case of the world we live in today, Marie, that you may offend someone and there's always somebody that will be offended. And if that was the case, that there was somebody offended by the video or by whatever was said by Stephen amongst the group and amongst obviously the staff, why can't it be sorted out in-house? And if whoever that person may be, whether he was on the staff or whether he was a player, why didn't he just pull Stephen aside and say, look, Stephen, I wasn't comfortable with that video or whatever, and chat it out and leave it at that and keep it in-house? The fact that it was leaked to a newspaper in England and all of a sudden it's become this big story, and Stephen has a difficult job enough as it is, I just think it's garnered far more traction than what it needed to be. And I'm just hoping common sense will prevail in the end here.
Well, Lisa Fallon joins us now on the line as well. Lisa, you've been involved in international setups with Northern Ireland. Motivational videos, what are your thoughts on them?
Yeah, I think they can be really, really effective. In fact, as part of my role with the Northern Ireland men's national team from 2012 to December 2017, I actually made the motivational videos that the team watched for every single competitive game. So I do understand the importance of them, but and the value that they can have. I mean, I suppose we, when I was with Northern Ireland, we never used them for friendly games. For a start, it was only ever competitive games. So, but look, Stephen obviously felt he wanted to use one for this particular friendly game. But what I did learn from making them, and particularly with dealing with players in Northern Ireland, where obviously I had to, as part of my remit with the videos, was to create a sense of collective identity. And obviously with players from such varied and diverse backgrounds, I personally felt it was a real challenge for me to ensure that the content of the video would relate to everybody, would represent everybody, and wouldn't alienate anybody. And I think it can be very difficult to find that balancing act. Personally, I would never bring politics into a sports motivational video, because unless you have a really, really true understanding of every single person that's in the room, you can never be certain that you will reach every person. And not everybody plays professional football or represents their country for political motivations. And you can't assume that you know everybody's background or everybody's beliefs. And it's, for me, it was, look, Stephen made that decision. That he felt that was what was required. You know, when he reflects, he may feel otherwise. But I personally, having, you know, extensive experience making them, not just at international level, but also at club level, I do understand the value of them. But what's most important for me, and I always found, was the context, the timing, the mood and the tone, because this is the last thing generally that they watch before they go out on the pitch. If you do it in the dressing room, or if you do it in the team meeting just before they leave the hotel to go to the stadium. So you've got to get them right. There's a massive responsibility with them. You get the tone wrong or you get the context wrong and it changes the mood in the group, or it has the potential to. So I do think, you know, the way this story has blown up obviously is disappointing. Obviously, I'm sure everybody involved would prefer if this matter had been dealt with in-house, which would be the norm in a dressing room situation. But the reality is it's out there now, and it's out there because somebody or some people were, it didn't strike the right chords with them, and obviously that's something that Stephen will have to reflect on.
Well, our soccer correspondent, Tony O'Donoghue, joins us now. Tony, are there any further developments?
Well, there was a lot of talk that there was going to be a board meeting this evening, but I'm told that's now not the case. Stephen Kenny did meet with Gary Owens, the interim CEO, who's still in the job, even though the permanent CEO, Jonathan Hill, has been in the job since the 1st of November. Roy Barrett will meet with them later on this evening. He's the independent chair of the FAI. Sources in the Stephen Kenny camp say that it was a very positive meeting, and that there's, you know, no question that his job would be under threat, but nonetheless they want to give everyone an opportunity to say their piece. We still don't know who the complainant is, haven't been identified, and we don't know if they've come forward subsequently to speak to other members of the FAI executive, and some of the board members believe that it's a matter for the executive to resolve. They need to come with a recommendation to the board rather than the board getting involved at this point. The fact that it's perhaps a HR matter. But it has certainly escalated, you can say, and you'd have to wonder how much does it affect the authority of Stephen Kenny going forward as the Republic of Ireland senior manager.
Tony, I know it's in the papers and it's been talked about on radio shows and news bulletins, but how big a deal is it, do you think?
I think it's significant, I must say, yeah, because, you know, having it out there in the public domain like this, remember, the game against England was last Thursday week, so 8 days ago now, and this didn't emerge until 6 days later. None of the players, any of the sources that I've spoken to that were, you know, either on the playing side or on the FAI staff, seemed to be, they weren't at all upset about the video. It didn't make that much of a deal. It wasn't a big deal as far as a lot of them were concerned. Now, you could ask about, you know, the judgment of even doing a video like that. at senior international level. I've heard Lisa there say it's been done regularly for Northern Ireland. But the fact that they've now put Stephen Kenny out there and questions his power in the dressing room and his authority, that's not good, especially with the campaign we've had so far when, unfortunately, he's yet to register his first win.
And Lisa, just from, you know, you've worked in England, just from a reputational point of view, you know, in years to come, if Stephen wants to further his career, do you think something like this could do damage?
I think results ultimately determine the success or non-success of a manager, and ultimately that will be what defines pretty much any manager's reign. And I think, you know, people will do things on their journeys, and when they reflect, they might think, I might have done it differently, or I might do it differently the next time. This will probably be one of those moments for Stephen. But I think, you know, right now the biggest challenge for the, you know, once this situation is resolved, it dies down, I think the biggest issue for Stephen and his backroom team is to get the team on track in terms of a football sense, and get the team scoring the goals, and get the team getting the wins, and realistically get people back to talking about what they should be talking about, which is the performance and the results of the national team, as opposed to all this other stuff that's going on. You know, you'd question, had we qualified for Euro 2020, would we be talking about this stuff? And the reality is we probably wouldn't. So, you know, I think you have to have context on all of this. And, you know, right now, I think, you know, ultimately every manager is judged by the results. And I think, you know, that would always and should always be the case.
Alan, just on Tony's point about the power and the authority, not scoring goals aside, is this a breach in trust, though? You know, for Stephen going forward, how much can he now trust the dressing room? How much can he really express himself with it if everyone's, you know, going to go off and make complaints or go to the papers?
I'm delighted you brought that up, Donegal, because I think that's the biggest issue at play here going forward. The trust has been broken by whether it's a member of staff or one of the playing members. And going forward, I think that needs to be addressed straight away, because whatever happens kind of in the sanctuary of the dressing room, I feel it should stay in the dressing room. And as I also mentioned earlier, whoever was offended by that, whether it be a member of staff or a player, it should have been went straight to Stephen, spoken with Stephen and addressed straight away without it ever going, as you said, leaked to a paper, especially an English paper, and blown up into the story that it is now, because it just adds so much trouble on top of Stephen's job, a difficult job, as we already know, coming off the back of the results. So I think that's the first thing that needs to be addressed is, Tony mentioned there that we still don't know who the complainant is. I think we need to find out who the complainant is. And if that's a question, as I say, it's obviously one of the members of staff or a player, whoever, it needs to be addressed straight away. And because the most important thing you can have in any group dynamic, especially in a dressing room, is that trust amongst your staff and players. And if it's someone seen to be going against that and you're not pulling in the same direction, I don't think it's good going forward.
Tony, with the chat we were planning on having tonight, it was supposed to be a football chat before all this happened, but there are a couple of big games on tonight, and Bowes and Dundalk at 7:45 is one of them.
Well, yeah, but before we get onto that, though, I just want to say, I think there's a matter of communication here as well, and that's very significant. I do think the tone of the FAI's press statement last night, where they refer to this being dealt with as a matter of urgency, it really sort of escalated it into something that was really, really significant. And yet, when I spoke to someone senior in the FAI today and I said, because it was such a matter of urgency and because the meeting with Stephen Kenny happened and there's more meetings and discussions this evening, you know, will we get it resolved this evening? And then I was told that it's unlikely, again, because they wanted to hear everyone's point of view. But this means now, from a communications point of view, it was the story yesterday, today, and will bleed right into the weekend and into the Sunday papers as well. And, you know, it's what everyone will be talking about. And I feel further undermining Stephen Kenny when, if it was that urgent, it should be sorted urgently.
A bit like everything that's been happening for the last while, Tony, these things tend to drag on and on, but you would hope for his sake that it will be. And just to get on to the football tonight, Bowes and Dundalk, it is what we had planned on talking about. A big game for both of them, really.
Well, considering the scoreline in Ballybofey at the moment, absolutely. You know, this is a game worthy of a final, you might say. You know, first and second in the table against the league champions until they were deposed by Shamrock Rovers. Dundalk may be suffering because of the amount of games they've had. They've got a big game coming up in the Europa League on Thursday. Bohemians have been, you know, one of the top teams in the table, only eclipsed by Shamrock Rovers. They've home advantage. It's not the same without the crowd. But Bohs have been unlucky in the Cup over the last number of seasons and will be hoping to finish what's been a very positive season for them with an appearance at the Aviva Stadium and make it all the way to the final.
Well, Eric White is watching Shamrock Rovers and Finn Harps for us. Eric.
Yes, good evening. At halftime here, it's Finn Harps 2, Shamrock Rovers 0, the league champions and cup holders in all sorts of trouble. They fell behind on the quarter hour mark. Barry McNamee with an assured finish from close range from Adam Foley's low cross. Harps doubled their lead then on 21 minutes. McNamee, the provider on this occasion, his free kick delivery met by Stephen Follin, whose looping header found the net beyond Alan Manis in the Rovers goal. It was his best chance, Tim, in between the Harps goals when Danny Lafferty found himself unmarked at the back post. Lovely assist from Jack Byrne, but he headed his very presentable opportunity wide of the target. Harps look in control. They've been excellent in this first half. Foley and Mark Russell have come close to extending their advantage. And Rovers, remember, unbeaten domestically this season. They've lacked any sort of creativity in this game. And their double ambitions under serious threat here at a wet and windy Finn Park. At halftime, it's Finn Harps 2, Shamrock Rovers 0. And the winners, remember, will have a home game against either Sligo Rovers or Derry City in the semi-final.
Thanks so much, Eric. Tony, I don't think we were expecting that half-time score.
I didn't want to steal Eric's thunder there, but I was aware of that. And that's extraordinary because Shamrock Rovers have been the best team in the country, have been unbeaten. And if they get knocked out this evening, and there's still 35 minutes to go, so, you know, they're good enough to get that back. But up in Ballybofey, it's going to be a tough ask against a Finn Harps team with momentum. But if they are to drop out of the cup tonight, that opens it up completely. And either of these two teams here tonight in Dalymount Park, Bohemians or Dundalk, will expect that could help them in their quest to lift the cup this year.
Thanks so much, Tony. If anything else happens, sure, you might come back to us. Who knows? Lisa, there is a big Women's National League game as well. Peamount and Shelburne are in action tomorrow. With both of them really could win the league at this stage.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's you know, it's probably a really fitting you know, conclusion to the season. I know it doesn't quite conclude the season tomorrow, but should either team win the game, then it pretty much does, and they would become the champions. And so it is a huge game, and you know, it's great that the game is being live streamed, so people will be able to watch. I think it's a 6 o'clock kickoff tomorrow, so it's a great opportunity for people, if they can, to watch the top two or two of the top two teams in this country, and some of the talent that's on show. But like, obviously, I mean, if Peamount win, it's the first time that they'll have defended their Women's National League title. And obviously if Shells win, then the trophy goes to Talca Park. So it is a fantastic game. There's so many really talented players on show, and I think it's going to be a really exciting game. Very, very often there's very little between these two teams, and it's a game I'd be really looking forward to watching.
So much going on this weekend, and the Premier League is back as well, Alan. We won't get through all of it, but it would be wrong to not ask you about Man United. West Brom, surely, it's rooted to the bottom, but United haven't won at home. Is this a banana skin?
You just wouldn't know Man United, Donica, but I think before that as well, there's a massive game with Spurs and Man City. Obviously, Mourinho against Guardiola, and that's been hyped up massively also. Spurs going really well, and obviously Man City also looking to get back to winning ways after the draw with Liverpool, and they have a game in hand as well to try, and it's very competitive at the top. But Man United, to be fair, obviously you know my feelings on Solskjaer, Donica, but to be fair, just when you thought he was on the brink, the last game at home away to Everton, and everybody thought if they lose against Everton coming off the back of a very poor European result in midweek, that maybe his time is up. But they pulled out probably the best performance I can remember under Solskjaer, bar probably the one away to PSG last year. They were absolutely brilliant against Everton. Fernandes getting two goals as well. So if they play anything like that, they're capable of beating anyone. But the problem for Man United, as we all know, and you mentioned it going in against the likes of West Brom, a potential banana skin, is that they've just been so inconsistent. But if they do play anything like the, what they played against Everton, they'll dispose of West Brom fairly comfortably.
Lisa, like we said, we won't get through it, but Liverpool and Leicester, both title contenders, should be a great game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we'll all be really interested to see how Liverpool do with so many injuries now racked up, with Virgil van Dijk and Joe Gomez and Trent Alexander-Arnold all out. Jordan Henderson is out. So, you know, I think it's going to be really interesting just to see. But what I actually have to say is I've loved Jurgen Klopp's attitude, the way he's talked up the players that are going to play. He's saying there's no excuses, we won't make excuses. You know, yes, it's disappointing that we don't have our best players available, but like I think he said, we're a unit, we're a proper unit, and the more problems we have, the closer we're going to stick together, and we won't take up excuses, we won't give up, and we'll, as soon as we assess the situation, we drive on now and we go after the solutions. And I really, really love that mindset from Jurgen Klopp. I think it's, you know, when a club like Liverpool have suffered so many big injuries to huge players for them, you know, for the manager to be already talking along those lines and not making the excuses and talking up the rest of the players in the squad, I think is really, really solid. And that's why I think, you know, I think there'll be a lot of fight in this Liverpool team. I don't think it'll be a foregone conclusion. And I think it's a game that, you know, we're along with the others, there's some cracking games this weekend. It there's a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, absolutely. Lisa and Alan, as always, thanks so much for joining us on Game On. Quick break and we're back chatting Gaelic football.
Game On 2FM with Green Fern. Snack smart with Green Fern's new high-protein snacking range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game On 2FM.
Welcome back to Gaelic football now, and there are three provincial finals down for a decision this weekend. Ulster, Munster and Leinster. And to go through these games, we are joined by former Meath footballer Brian Farrell and former Tipperary footballer Declan Brown. Declan, we're going to go to you first, because we're going to start with Cork and Tipperary, and there's a huge amount of sport on, and in a way it almost feels a little bit like this fixture is going under the radar. What's it like down in Tipperary though?
Hi Marie, it's definitely not going under the radar down here. You know, it's a huge occasion. Obviously, during the summer, we thought we'd never get this far. And in Tip, the draw was kind to us, you know, as well. So we always knew we'd a chance. And that's no disrespect to Clare or Limerick, they would be thinking the same. But we knew we had a chance of getting to a Munster final in the normal format. So the fact that we're in the final now and on bloody Sunday weekend is absolutely huge. It's huge. And like, there's only a core support in football circles down here in Tip, but the one time we don't get to finals too often, and now we're not allowed into it either. So it's even harder to watch it on the television. But like you said, in the weekend at Tinnabury, it's a massive occasion.
Well, I'm sure Cork are probably thinking the same as well, because they don't have Kerry in it. But yeah. Brian, it's interesting, because the big word I think that comes to mind when I think of this game is expectation. And in the last game, Cork didn't have that expectation on their shoulders. They had a massive intensity, work rate, 1-8 off turnovers. Do you think they're going to be able to handle the expectation now that's going to come with this game?
That's memory, is
yep.
it? Sorry?
Please, yeah, Brian, yep.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be, you know, Cork obviously doing favours now for the weekend, but, you know, they hung in there against Kerry, and you mentioned their turnovers. You know, it's very, very seldom to see Kerry getting caught on the turnover count, and they were punished, you know, so, and coming down the home straight there, Kerry lads were delighted, I said, to see Luke Connolly shooting from where he shot that day, but where it fell down to Mark Ian was a great finish. So all the pressure is on Cork, but it just really a factor last night, Marie, that like, there's only two of the current Cork panel that have Munster medals, you know, so there's a lot of inexperience in that Cork team too. So it all depends how they'll react to Munster final day and the pressure of being favourites, whereas Tipper going in, obviously huge underdogs. But I go back to early in 2002, we drew Cork in Thurles the first day, and we got an awful hammering the second day. But there's always a big day in Tip football, and we're hoping that it's going to be something.
Declan, just on that playing free, the tag of underdogs, but David Power has said that, you know, they've beaten Cork at every age level, so they'll go there with no fear.
They will, Donegan, that's true. But it's again, I was looking back on our minor team in 11, which David was over. I think there's only three or four of those lads actually going to be talking out on Sunday. So there's a lot of, you know, a lot of new lads in our panel as well. But they have they've beaten Cork and Kerry all the way up, because we had a massive structure in underage development for about 7 or 8 year period, and we really got big reward out of that. We played in All Ireland under 21 final as well. So like, David has been probably at the helm on those teams that have beaten the Corks and the Kerry, so he knows well. But it's a different kettle of fish on a Munster senior football final day. We went down 16 to Killarney to play Kerry. It was huge expectation as well, and you know, we got well beaten. So like, it just takes on a different lease of life in a Munster final day. So I'm just hoping our lads will, you know, they'll embrace it, but not be afraid of it either.
When you look at the key areas, and one of them has to be around midfield, Declan, and looking back at that Cork-Gerry game, you could see with their kickouts, they went long for everyone bar one. But they had Maguire and Walsh and O'Hanlon and Dean to aim for. But on this occasion, if Tip have their players fit, they'll have the Kennedys, Liam Casey, Stephen O'Brien and Reardon. So it could be very different.
Yeah, you know, I'd be honest with you, Marie, when I saw the Cork team before the Kerry game, I didn't know a lot of them, you know. But to see, like, as you just mentioned there, the Killian O'Hanlon and Sean Meehan at centre-back, they're deep seamless players. But like you said, it's we have big men around the middle of the field too, so it's going to be, I'll be honest with you, it's whoever can win the breaking ball. Because in football nowadays, Marie, there's not too much clean ball won around the middle. So I think whoever's up for the battle, and like you mentioned Colin O'Riordan, like that's going to be a big, big call for David. You know, what he does with Colin, it's great to see him available. But on the flip side, there's going to be some poor chap going to be not named on the 26 either, you know. So there's two sides of it. But if Colin is available, it's made.
Would you play him, Declan?
The fact that he's available and the Swans have given him permission, I don't think you can bring him on with 20 minutes to go or 25 minutes to go. I think you have to start him. And it might go against my better judgment, really, but you know, these days we're 85 years waiting for to win a Munster title, you know. So I think we'd all forgive David if he played Colin O'Riordan. I mean, it's only if you lose and things go wrong, that's when you'll hear the bad words and the bad vibes. But the fact that he's available and he's willing to put his career in Australia on the line, I think you have to be.
Brian, Cork get judged really harshly, especially in Cork, but it has been a good year, beating Kerry, promotion from Division 3. If they were to win a Munster, is that enough for Cork, do you think, or is the pressure on to go further?
That's to me, is it? Look, I agree with Declan there. It's a massive opportunity for Tipperary. You know, they've been sitting in the long grass and watching Cork have a fantastic win over Kerry, you know. They've had 2 weeks prep, and I think they'll target it. I think divisions and everything will go out the window come Sunday, and I think they're going to be well prepared. A lot of them have good experience from the 2011 All-Ireland minor final, so they absolutely won't fear Cork, and they'll see it as a massive opportunity. And Declan said there that they wouldn't have a great footballing support traditionally down there with hurling being so strong. But if they win on Sunday, they'll have double that and they'll be crawling out of the woodwork.
Down for the double.
I'm going to get you to call that one for us as the independent, Brian. Brian? Oh, we've lost Brian. We're going to have to call it back. Declan, there's no point even asking you to call it, because I'd say you know.
Yeah, as I said, you can read into things, and as Brian said about leagues, like Tip played Cork in February in the league in Turles, and I think it was 21 points. Tip scored to 3-12, you know, so beaten on the night. Or the 3-13, sorry, we beat by a point. It was definitely 8 months ago. You know, so there's not too much between the teams. Both played Division 3, but I just feel, obviously, a lot of things have to go for us. You know, we have a few injuries, and if those lads can get into the pitch, we definitely have a great chance. But I think, you know, in past years, we had this fear of not performing or not doing well on finals days, whereas this current crew have that experience of playing on big days. And I'll be honest with you, if we turn up and perform, I think we've a right chance of winning.
Well, Brian is back, and Brian, Declan mentioned there that a lot will have to go right for Tipperary on the day. I'd imagine you feel the same about Meath.
Yeah, a whole lot will have to go right for me done today. Look, if the eternal optimist in me wants to get really excited about it, you know, they're in a good position, Mead, but they need to have a big performance on Sunday. It is all about the performance, you know. They didn't do themselves justice in last year's Leinster final. They regrouped and they got together, and everyone talks about their improvement between last year's Leinster final and now. But I suppose the bottom line is they played their 3 Super 8 games and their 8 league games this year in Division 1 against great opposition, mind you, and they got one draw out of it, and had a good second half against Kildare last week. So all the Meath diehards are crying out for a real good performance now tomorrow evening.
Say there'll be a few of them as well that be thinking, look, they might be able to pull one, a fast one on Dublin, just given the year that's in it as well. And look, I think when you look at the scoring, Brian, and particularly, okay, the goals, 12 goals, but Jordan Morris, you've got young players coming in, he's 4-5 in championship, 4-3 coming from play. Somebody like him, having, you know, if you could get him firing, there has to be a lot of hope there.
Yeah, me that have a very young team, you know, there's really good players in the county team. The ages of probably 18 and 24, and they've actually, them younger lads like Jordan Morris and Shane Walsh and these guys have actually had the upper hand on Dublin from under 14 to 16s, and even into minor. If you go back and look at the minor results over the last few years, they've been quite successful over them. But I suppose it's what happens between 18 and 21 is what's making the Dublin guys far superior. You know, if you look at their team that played against Tip in 2011, there's probably 8 of them involved in the game on Sunday, or tomorrow in the Leinster final. And if you look at the Tip team that played in that All-Ireland final, there's probably only 3 of them. They actually beat me that same year in the Leinster final. There's probably 3 or 4 me guys. So it's kind of what happens with them in these counties between 18 and 21 that decides what's going to happen on days like Leinster final day.
Declan, when you look at Dublin, and one of the things that does stand out is the fact that we haven't seen a lot of their big players yet. We haven't seen Michael Dara, we haven't seen Kev Mack, we haven't seen Keane O'Sullivan. And if you just look at what's coming down the track, potentially for them anyway, it's going to be very hard to get into that team, because if you're on the bench, there's not a lot of games in during the week because they're playing every single week. So trying to make an impact is the biggest challenge that Desi has, just trying to keep all those players happy as well. Throw in Philly McMahon, Brian Howard, Davey Byrne, Paul Mannion. That's a lot of big name players.
It is, you know, but I suppose isn't every manager's dream to have them at your disposal, you know, we're at 7, Brian probably step up from where we are down here, but you know, we're used to hoping lads will turn up, maybe, or we can get the best we can on the pitch, whereas Desi Farrell or Jim Gavin, no matter who was injured or who was out, always had a super 15 going out, you know. So, but as you say, the way the championship is structured now, if you're playing well in one game, it would nearly get you to an All-Ireland final, you know, because you're playing week on week and your form wouldn't dip too much. But the scary part is what they have to come back or come in, or if someone not going well, what they can spring from the bench. Whereas a lot of county teams are looking over their shoulder and they're saying, is the fella going in? Is he going to be any better than the fella coming out? Whereas in Dublin, it's just if all stars and all Ireland medals behind you, and they're putting up their hands to go and just see what they can do. So it's they're just a step ahead of everyone, Marie. You know, and when you're winning, winning is everything, and to Dublin and. They're doing this year on year, and we're all saying this year it might be the time to catch them, but they're showing no signs of letting up, you know. And Meath have a free shot tomorrow night, you know. But as Brian said, it's all about performance. At the end of the day, the result is going to take care of itself, but you need to perform to have any chance. And I hope for Meath's sake that they do, because they played. I read again an article that they were beaten by a couple of points in all those league matches, so. They've been very close as well, and probably Miss March to get relegated. So, from a weaker county, I would hope Meath will drop a great performance, and who knows on the night.
Well, I'm going to get you to call that one. So, Declan,
obviously you have to go with Dublin by a comfortable margin. But again, like I said, I'd hope things will go right for Meath, and you know that they're not chasing the game from the. Early on, you know, they can make like they did in the league match that they held on and held on and Dublin pulled away in the end. So I'd hope something like that would happen.
So let's move on to Cavan and Donegal, because it's actually just another real fascinating one. Cavan have been the story of the championship, 6 matches in 6 weeks, and then Donegal are everyone's tip to dethrone the Dubs, but at the same time they still have a really stirring test at this weekend, Brian.
Yeah, like Donegal have been fair impressive, to be honest with you. When you look at them, their improvement from year on year, you can see kind of the way Stephen Rochford has them set up along with Declan Bonner, and they're transitioning the ball very well. Whereas back in the day, kind of when they got caught after the McGuinness time, they were just caught very defensively. And they're everyone's tip, I suppose, to be Dublin's biggest challengers, you know. Cavan have pulled it out of the bag the last two games. They've been well behind, and they've showed great grit and resilience. You know, they're obviously, Mickey Graham has a big effect with them there. You know what he got out of Mullinac, and it seems to, the guys seem to be answering to him with Cavan. You know, but I just feel it will be a step too far. You know, I just think Donegal will have too much power and pace for them on the day.
Everyone is talking about goalkeepers, and I think when it comes to Donegal in particular, like, we're talking about their free scoring and their forwards and that, but everything does seem to come back, Declan, to Sean Patton in goals.
It's incredible and really to watch. You know, like, the goalkeepers can start the attacks now. It's just bombs 80, 90, 100 yards. You know, it's incredible what he can do. And when you have big men like Michael Murphy around that area picking up the break, you know, you're on attack straight away, where a lot of other teams will go short to a corner, and you take 20-25 seconds to work it out in the middle of the field, whereas this guy just goes route one, you know. So it's huge, yeah. But like a lot of most goalies, they're coming up now into 45-50 yard frees, and you know, Galligan for Cavan as well, you know. So there's more strings to goalkeepers' blows now, whereas in our day it was just shot stop and move it out to the middle of the field and let the midfielders win it. Where nowadays it's just so much that there's goalkeeping coaches and there's so much time being put into goalkeepers, so it just shows you the importance of the restart.
Yeah, we're in trouble when we were chatting about in my day, Brian. we never played 6 weeks in a row though, and Cavan do get off to slow starts. Yeah. Donegal do need to be a bit ruthless here though, don't they?
Yeah, well, they have shown that ruthless. They have that ruthless streak in them, and they've developed it, you know. And like with their keeper, like the keeper is one aspect to their dimension of getting up to attack. But they've a lot of powerful men between in the middle third of the pitch, you know. With they've got Langan, Murphy, they've got Jason McGee, they've got all these guys that they can call on out there. And then they've got like the Owen Bond, Gallagher, and Ryan McHugh foraging away out there. So like they have that ruthless streak, you know. And I think they're only going to get better as this championship develops.
Okay, so in a word, Brian, Donegal, I'm assuming?
In a word, I'm highly related to a few people down in Cavan that would hate me to call it. I'm going to have to say Donegal.
It's my Christmas card for you.
Brian Farrell and Declan Brown, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to take a break and then we're back with hurling.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on the go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It's time to talk hurling now. Tomorrow's quarterfinals see Galway and Tipperary renew their rivalry, and first-time managers Liam Cahill and Brian Lowell go head-to-head as Waterford and Clare face off. Niall Moran joins us now. Niall, I want to start with Clare, but I won't. I'm going to start with Galway and Tipperary because it is the early game. Look, we've seen Galway against Kilkenny. They were cruising really in the third quarter, but are they lacking that killer instinct? And do you think they can bring it out tomorrow?
I'm sure a lot of lessons would have been learned last Saturday night, both on the pitch and on the line. Look, coming the kind of couple of goals that Kilkenny did get, they're a little bit naive in some of the elements of all the defending. And I know even look Shane Neal and John Fitz on the Galway line, they have looked at some of those points. They'd have been very, very frustrated. They had a lot of the hard work done, but probably what really probably disappointed them is they had kind of recovered from both the goals, and still Kilkenny kind of just eked it out coming down the home stretch. And ultimately, that comes with experience. And like obviously, then we knew the class of Richie Hogan and TJ Reid. But I don't think it'll be the setback that people will think it'll be. I think they'll know that they're very, very close. I think that the coming weekend, you might see, like, say, Aidan Hart coming back into the fold, maybe even David Burke. That lad, that little bit of want is experiencing. Do you know what I mean? I think Galway could take beating tomorrow.
Okay, and Clare and Waterford, one of them are going to be gone as well. And we're going to talk about Clare first. Well, actually, we might as well just talk about Tony Kelly because he's been the one driving that Clare team, 145. But if you're Liam Cahill, Niall, what do you do with him tomorrow?
What you do with him? Geez, you might try and flatten his tyres or kind of knock him off a belly, put up roadworks or something there anyway, because, and to be honest, I'd say the way he is now, he'd be able to fly there. Look, he's magical. Even the young lads at school and everything else, it's Tony Kelly this, Tony Kelly that, and there's adults, there's old men inside nursing homes that are talking about Tony Kelly. He's just being superb, but again, I suppose, like Brian Nolan and his management, the first thing they'd say is that he's only as good as the guys around him, and the fellas have been working very, very hard. Like you do with the likes of, you know, David Fitz, Carl Malone, David Reedy, these lads, like they work very, very hard. They mightn't be as clinical or as polished as him, but without their help, he'd be a lot less. But I do think that Waterford, if they don't take last Sunday as a hammer blow, and I don't think they will, I think they'll probably realise that Limerick are maybe 2 years further up the road than what they are. If they don't take last Sunday as a hammer blow, I think they'll be organised and structured enough to beat them. Shane Fives looks to be out, he's a loss. But if they can get someone like Conor Gleeson back into it, maybe to take up the man-marking duties. I know they're spoken about Callum Lyons, but to sacrifice the hurling ability of Callum to mark Tony Kelly might be lunacy. But it's a great game in store. I touted for Wexford last week, and suppose when you look at the track record, Clare have had a very good track record against Wexford. And again, I'm about to repeat the errors in my way because Clare also have a good track record against Waterford. But I just think Waterford are a bit stronger. Now, Clare have named supposedly the same team, but I'd be very shocked if David McInerney didn't see action from the start there tomorrow. So, look, I think I think Waterford might just be slightly ahead of them, but again, Clare have a good track record. And if Limerick have to play them in an Ireland semi-final, they won't fancy that either.
Okay, Niall Moran, another super weekend ahead. Thanks so much for joining us, Dunnock. I feel like it's just take a deep breath again and head for the weekend.
Yeah, no, hope for no extra time. We haven't time for extra time.
We don't.
Blonde Tracy is up next. We're back Monday. Have a great weekend.
Are natural, high in protein, and packed with flavour.